We have two of the most interesting men in the world joining us right now on the program here. This is going to be a tremendous. We've enjoyed having these guys on individually and continue to enjoy to doing so. But we've also come to see how much fun it is to have them in on the show together when there are things that they both can opine on equally well. And the topic here tonight, of all things Charlie Sheen, certainly fits that bill. First of all, our good friend, our go-to guy on TV and technology, and we are going to be, we'll do this the next time we have him on the show and we're able to devote a little bit more time and do a proper package for him. We will be inducting him as our newest dignitary in the FDH Lounge, elevating him from the status of mere guest. Well, he's never been mere anything to us, but not a guest, a dignitary in the lounge, our good friend Simon Applebaum. Simon, good to have you on here tonight, you being our good friend from Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Great to have you back in, my friend.
Great to be back with you, Rick. No, I'm not a mere guest. What an end to your last statement on college basketball. It was wonderful that when the Basketball Hall of Fame was announced last week, that Eddie Einhorn, the former head of TDS, who really was the man responsible and the company responsible for college basketball, when we watch it now, was honored. It's a great induction that will be happening later this year, and congrats to the College Basketball Hall of Fame for doing that.
Eddie Einhorn, and if memory serves also, I think he's the same guy who led that outlaw wrestling movement in the 70s here that was trying to compete, trying to go into the different territories and compete head-to-head with a quasi-national package for a while there. Didn't quite get the job done, but they were sort of a precursor to the WWF national expansion of 84.
Right, the IWA, and he, by the way, is still at 75 years young, I believe, still the vice chairman of the Chicago White Sox.
Interesting, yeah. That's a guy who really... you know, I don't know if he's put out memoirs or not. If he has, they'd be fascinating to read. If he hasn't, he should.
I hope he does, Rick, because TBS, along with Midland Television Network and other syndication outlets in the 60s, really brought college football and college basketball to the national spotlight. Many of the minor bowl games got their first shot at both TBS and Midland. And back in the late 1986, January of 86, the great game of the century, UCLA and Houston, was the first nationally televised college basketball game. 120 stations did in syndication. TBS ran it. Dick Everett did play-by-play. That was his big opening to the national fame. And it was one of the great moments in, I think, not only college basketball, but also one of the great seminal moments in televised sports.
Absolutely. Yeah, the guy's had a very interesting career. And the word interesting, of course, always sums up very well our good buddy Lloyd Carroll, who is also on the phone lines now. He of Queens Chronicle, Good Time Magazine, or Good Times Magazine, rather, many other outlets as well here. A man who writes on everything from sports to accounting to entertainment, which is where we find him tonight. Lloyd Carroll, our good friend. Lloyd, good to have you back on, buddy. Lloyd?
Yeah, hey, Rick. It was funny. I was in and out. I didn't get to hear Simon's response, except through the internet, not on the phone. So I just want to report that.
Okay. Well, it's a pleasure to have both of you guys on, continuing to monitor this circumstance here. We had Mike Walters from TMZ on the show last week, and we have put out, I might as well say this publicly, I'm not promising anything here. We've put out what is, I understand, the mother of all long shots here and trying to book Chaz Sheen for our show here. But what the hey, it never hurts to ask.
I think Charlie would enjoy this this format. I think that Charlie would, you know, he's a big sports guy, so it would not surprise me if he came on, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's any number of things we could definitely talk to him about. It was fascinating to talk to Mike Walters last week, who'd actually been out to the compound, who'd actually looked him in the eye, seen everything that was happening. And I know that, again, Simon, for as much as you do every week, talking on your weekly internet show to leading folks in the entertainment industry and also technology, but with all of the entertainment contacts that you have, I know clearly you've got a really good grasp on this story as it continues to emerge and take different shapes and everything. We move now into the arena in the last day or so where I think we knew it was going all along. He finally gets whacked by Warner Brothers. He's off the show. And we start to move into what looks like at least the beginning of the end game as it relates to Two and a Half Men, if not his personal issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Rick and Lloyd. It's very possible that this will be the last year for Two and a Half Men, and if so, there's nothing to grieve over. They've had a great eight-year run on CBS. They're still doing great reruns on local stations, on FX as well. And it's very difficult to replace Charlie Sheen. We've had a number of attempts over the years of major stars in television series being replaced, and often it doesn't work. There have been examples of where it has in the short run, and in fact, Charlie Sheen replaced Michael J. Fox, if you remember, on Spin City for about a year or two, but that was pretty much in the tailwind of that show. It's very difficult to replace Charlie Sheen. I've heard John Stamos. I've heard Rob Lowe. There's a lot of issues with both of them. And the thing is, you got to talk chemistry. You know, whether you like the show or not, and I'm not a big fan of Two and a Half Men. I think it's overrated as a comedy. But I do grant the fact that there's chemistry between Sheen and John Cryer and the rest of the cast. And it's very difficult. Cameron is on live. It's very difficult to find chemistry. And it's going to take a bit for Chuck Lorre and the people on that show to make it happen. And I think that it's a 50-50, maybe 60-40 that Warner Brothers will call it a day.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Simon. Spinoffs are as American as apple pie. Do you think there's any way they could work John Cryer and Angus Jones and kind of get away from the Two and a Half Men, but just give them maybe a different format, move them around somewhere, give it like it may be a long shot, but kind of give them a year, a season or two that way?
CBS could do that. It's certainly in their ballpark, so we've seen it, you know, quite time and again, although sometimes it's worked. Sometimes it had another match, had after match, and that only ran a year. Again, the writing wasn't there, the chemistry wasn't. It depends on who they get and whether Chuck Lorre is involved with the show, with his crew, and the kind of writing that and directing that pops up.
Yeah, I think Lorre would definitely be involved. I think nothing else, just so he could show up Charlie Sheen. So that may be their best strategy. But I'm CBS and Warner Brothers. That's where I'd be looking at.
Yeah. Well, Lloyd, yeah. Before you get too enthusiastic about that, I got three words for you: Archie Bunker's Place.
Well, how many years did that run? Obviously, it was not on the Family. We will concede that. But did it have a decent year?
That ran quite a long time. Well, that ran quite like 4 or 5 years.
It did?
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was not the bomb that you would think. It certainly was not All in the Family. Even Norman Lear would concede that, but it was it had a pretty decent run.
Wow, look at me getting called on my revisionism. I thought it went like half a year or something.
Well,
it went that long?
You can't be blamed. Again, when you're comparing All in the Family, everything else would seem minor league.
Yeah.
After MASH, that was a problem because it didn't have any of the major stars. These were all the kind of the secondary and tertiary stars of MASH, and the public was going to go for it.
Yeah.
Is what happens to Charlie Sheen from here. And there is talk that Mark Cuban at HDNet is trying to get him into a show because Warner Brothers now got him out of the contract. He could do a scripted series, which is not a first for HD. They did one last year called Svetlana. Iris Barr, the creator of that show, was on my program last February. But I hope, frankly, that if Charlie does decide to do something with HDNet, that Mark Cuban offers this caveat: Charlie, you need to get rehabilitated. You need to get your act together. Because right now, what we are all watching is a train wreck, and it's very sad to watch.
Well, and Charlie Sheen, though, before I totally bury him, and I agree with you, Simon, he needs a little time away, he's had a number of peaks and valleys. I remember when he was doing, he met Denise Richards on, like, a great scene movie where he played a Dear Abby-type journalist. I remember at the upfront for Two and a Half Men, I was kidding him about some of his, some of those films, and he actually grunted at me, goes, are we here to discuss my recent career? And, I mean, he took in good stride, but I've learned never count out Charlie Sheen, not at least not forever.
Well, so in other words, then, he took that in better stride than Eric Mangini did when you asked him what it was like to be less popular than Bernie Madoff.
Well, actually, he was very good about that, Eric.
He said
one of the best lines ever. He said, he gets the front page, I get the back.
I know. I have to make at least one Lloyd Carroll press conference reference per conversation with you.
And now you know why the PR people never call on me.
Oh, man.
His longtime PR agent quit him before Warner Brothers had him quit the show.
Well, I have a feeling we'll see Stan Rosenfield and Charlie Roosevelt getting reunited probably a year or two from now.
Well, here's the thing, Simon. The point that you make, it goes beyond a very commonsensical, of course, that Cuban or anybody else dealing with the guy needs to insist on certain things here. And yet, what makes any of us think, in the present state of mind, that it's going to get anywhere? I mean, Charlie Sheen is doing everything and going as far as he can go. doing it his way. I think we're all presupposing what that means vis-a-vis illicit substances here, but he doesn't have anybody around him who is impressing these things upon him that you're talking about here, and methinks if there was anybody that decided to start impressing that upon him, they wouldn't be part of his inner circle any longer. So it would take some sort of attitude-changing circumstance to make what you're saying plausible, truly.
And you're hoping that the attitude-changing circumstance or attitude-transforming circumstance is not detrimental to him,
yeah,
or that he all of a sudden falls ill or whatever, or has a drug overdose, God forbid. But right now he is as high wire and act as you can see anywhere. It's like every time he opens his mouth, whether it's the 2020 or the Today Show or CBS Morning News or Evening News or wherever, he is just putting himself right in the midst of trouble every single time. And he really needs some sort of guidance. He needs some sort of stability. He's really got to get his act together, and somebody has to intervene. And maybe it's time that some people in the media say, you know what, Charlie, don't be on our air. You know, maybe to TMZ or Entertainment Tonight or E! Or The Inside, whatever. Sorry, Charlie, get your act together. We can't afford having you on the air. We're going to contribute to the issue.
I mean, I can't argue with the substance of what you're saying at all. And Lloyd, I want to ask you this.
Sure.
I mean, because again, both of you guys cover the TV industry very closely here. You guys both go to the upfronts every year in New York and check out a lot of these things. I made a comment to Mike Walters last week, and he kind of agreed with me that when you're talking about personal accountability and everything like that, I mean, it's easy to look at Charlie Sheen and say, certainly, especially since he's a parent, it needs to be applied here, here, and here. When it comes to the network, and I understand the network is now challenging the notion that there was no morals clause of any kind, but whatever there is, it doesn't seem as though it's on a very firm foundation. There's nothing that they can hold up in 64-point aerial type and say, you know, thou shalt not snort blow off the hook of the belly of a hooker, you know? So it's something where they've let him get away with an awful lot because he's been money in their bank all this time. So to the extent to which Charlie Sheen has the high moral ground on anybody at this point in time, Lloyd, it seems to me like it begins and ends with that proposition here. Where was the network on this stuff previously? And it seems like they were happy to rake in the cash when he was a fairly controllable train wreck.
Well, you know what? We're getting to the same scenario. Where were the major league owners when baseball players are taking steroids? I mean, obviously, you follow the money trail, and people are going to look the other way. I think there's a cliche where there's talent, there's temperament, and everybody just smiles and laughs about it. But you're 100% right, Rick. They knew what was going on.
Yeah, how about that, Simon? It's an issue where, and I know that you're somebody, I mean, you've written extensively about different areas and covered it on your shows, you know, of morality with some of the different networks and how they go about things here. There's a real notion where, when Charlie Sheen says, who did they think they were giving all this money to with little to no strings attached, one cannot really argue with him, can one?
Yes, but at the same token, you got to say that Charlie Sheen made his own soup, you know, in this. And apparently it had been building some time, and you certainly don't badmouth in public your producer, your studio, your network, et cetera, et cetera. That's the easiest way to get in trouble. It should have been water under the bridge and not making the rounds of the Today Show or E! Or wherever to try to see the reach publicly. But right now, what Charlie Sheen needs first and foremost is some sort of guidance. And don't forget also, he just lost his kids. And, you know, those kids right now don't have a father. So that's got to be worked out, too. So there's a lot of Charlie Sheen's life that he has to get active. What's sad, really, is he is a terrific actor. I still remember him in a film called Lucas. That was his first major movie. Wonderfully underrated film by David Seltzer, who wrote and directed the film. Didn't make it worth money, I thought it should have. One of the best coming-of-age dramas with Corey Haim, who, of course, since passed on. But Charlie showed you how really good an actor he could be, and it's really a shame that he's acting the way he's acting right now.
Well, you know what? That's very interesting. I want to take that point there and put it to Lloyd.
Yep.
Lloyd, do you concur with that? Because it seems like it's been hard to kind of get a grasp over the years of how good the guy really may or may not be when you look at some of the material that he had. You alluded to some of the lesser light type projects that he's been attached to. He's on a show where essentially he's been playing a version of himself, perhaps a parodied version of himself, for 9 years now. So how good do you really think he is, Lloyd?
Well, I think of Wall Street to me is probably his high watermark. You know, it's funny, when I saw the sequel, Wall Street 2, the best scene was when he came in as cameo as Bud Fox. Wall Street 2 really dragged. Shia LaBeouf, it was a decent actor. It was no Charlie Sheen in that particular role. So I think the man certainly has talent, but I also agree that when you're playing kind of the same role for 9 years, a certain ennui has set in, a certain boredom. That's not to excuse him insulting Chuck Lorre. I mean, really a bizarre anti-Semitic rant, but I wonder if that also played a part, a certain amount of boredom from doing the same thing over and over again.
Well, truly, exactly. And, you know, there are very good reasons, you know, in life in terms of purely of morality not to be anti-Semitic. One might say additionally, in the entertainment industry, it's also not a good career move as well. If morality isn't enough to guide you, perhaps morality and self-preservation might be enough to guide you. But that was still kind of self-destructive the way that he went off on his rants about Jewish people, which he's claiming are not anti-Semitic. And according to his own version of logic, it is. So, at least in his own head. But, you know, as we look at this, Simon, I want to get back to this again here about the lack of an explicit morals clause in the contract, because the latest thing to come out in the last 24 hours or so, when Warner Brothers was putting out this whole thing about acts of moral turpitude or anything like that, that they're trying to get into the matter of him distributing cocaine to others, you know, whether it be just that he'd shared with or whatever. I don't think anybody's labeling him as a dealer, but just passing it back and forth amongst fellow users here. That to me, I don't know all the details of this, but on a surface level, smacks of having it both ways. You don't have an explicit morals clause in the contract because Charlie Sheen was too powerful to have tolerated you putting it in, but you're trying to hold up something here that says, he still breached his contract in this way. I mean, is that having it both ways to a certain extent, Simon?
You know, Rick, this is the first time I'm hearing this, and I cannot off the bat believe that Warner Brothers, the biggest television series producer, and parent Time Warner, and CBS, the number one television network, would not have morals clauses in their contracts, no matter whether you're a big actor or a small actor or, you know, just a walk-on. I can't believe they would not have morals clauses of some major extent in their production contracts. It just doesn't make sense. It certainly doesn't make sense to the studio because of liability issues. Doesn't make sense to CBS. Doesn't make sense to FX or the syndicators or local stations. They would insist on it. I would like to hear more. This is the first time hearing of this, Rick, so
okay.
I'm sort of chewing off the lip.
Guys, here's what I got. I'm going to read this thing verbatim. This is from WBTV. And this is from the Warner Brothers television division here. I'm going to read this paragraph verbatim. Quote, if producer, in its reasonable but good faith opinion, believes performer has committed an act which constitutes a felony offense involving moral turpitude under federal, state, or local laws, or is indicted or convicted of any such offense, producer shall have the right to delete the billing provided for in this agreement from any broadcast or other uses which are thereafter made of the episode or episodes in which performer appears. In addition, to the extent such event interferes with performer's ability to fully and completely render all material services required hereunder or producer's ability to fully exploit the series, producer shall have the right to treat such act as a default under the applicable provisions hereof, end of quote. I would pair that, Simon, with what has come out in the last 24 hours here, some of these reports out of Warner Brothers that, contrary to what Sheen was saying about showing up in good condition, I mean, he might have been out all night, but he was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed when it came time to show up for work. They're claiming that there were times when he had to support himself, he had to lean on something or whatever because he wasn't in real good enough shape. First and foremost, I got to think that if there's even any tape of such things, first of all, Warner Brothers would have been smart to keep some of that stuff on tape. That will materialize as evidence, I would think. But what are your thoughts after hearing this verbatim on whether or not that's a strong enough morals clause for them to go after Charlie Sheen based on what we know now?
Well, that was the case, Rick, that he did come to work inebriated or he had a lean or whatever or it looked like he was sick of something. That could trigger the morals clause. I definitely think that could be a trigger.
Yeah, and that's
what he didn't get help for it.
What about my supposition? You know more about some of the inner workings of the entertainment business than me. My supposition that they might have filmed some of this stuff just in case, or put it in a vault just in case. What do you think about that? Certainly, if that comes out in the court of law, it's going to cut the legs out from underneath Charlie Sheen's team there. You think something like that might exist?
Well, I think so, yes.
Simon?
Go ahead, Lloyd.
It certainly could exist, but the other I'm thinking about this, if Warners really were to, let's say, use this as their main defense, what actor would ever want to check themselves into the Betty Ford Clinic? I mean, that would be almost an admission of this, and maybe make them unemployable given all this. So that's the only other issue I'm thinking about here.
That's a good point. And I got another question for you in a second here, Lloyd. Simon,
sure.
What's your take on this as far as, do you think there's a chance there might be some footage in a vault that Warner Brothers could fall back upon to prove that he might have been a little too inebriated at times?
Very well could.
Okay. Yeah, very interesting. That's just my supposition, and, you know, I don't know on that. But, Lloyd, again, based on this whole thing with a morals clause that may exist or may not exist, what's your sense in terms of the next project here? Because Simon had alluded to it earlier that Mark Cuban or somebody should put this in there. The HBO thing, which Charlie Sheen has been referring to, appears thus far to be a myth, but who knows if it materializes at a certain point in time.
I can't say it would be HBO. HBO is owned by the same Time Warner that owns Warner Brothers Television. I mean, I can't see that happening.
That's a very good point. That's an outstanding point. Yeah, maybe somebody should have told Charlie that before he started dropping their name. No wonder they were so quick to make a denial. But whoever the next outlet might be, what do you think the odds are that they're able to put similar wording in the contract without Sheen's lawyer going, hey, wait a minute?
Well, I'd imagine it depends on the amount of money involved here. I mean, if it's Mark Cuban and it's a low-budget reality type thing, he probably couldn't care less. If you're talking about big bucks like what we're seeing with Two and a Half Men, then certainly that would be in there.
Okay. Simon, do you have a sense of that on, you know, you've established, and I agree with you, that somebody should put that in the next one here, but based on the current state of affairs and based on the fact that Charlie Sheen's got his lawyer out there like a pit bull, like always, defending Charlie Sheen's interests as Charlie Sheen defines them anyways, what do you think the odds are of any clause similar to this making it into his next contract?
Well, Mark Cuban is no dummy, and he is a smart person. You know, of course, in the Dallas Mavericks, he's done a great job with HD, and I got to think he will have a morals clause in that contract. I mean, what kind of show Charlie agrees to do?
Yeah, well, that's going to be fascinating. Again, whatever he does is almost certainly going to be of a variety type of fare here. I have to wonder, to whatever extent, because of the availability and everything like this, I mean, I don't think we're at a saturation point yet, but we're bound to be. Plus, with all these webcasts that Charlie Sheen is doing, the one that he was going to be doing tonight, I understand, Lloyd, he has labeled the last such one that he's going to do. We'll see if he can stick to his word on that. But is he perhaps undermining the appetite for any type of subsequent thing here? If people are going to be like, that's probably just going to be the same thing he did on Ustream. Or in a sense, is the appetite for this thing apparently boundless enough that, when you factor in however much time it takes to get this into circulation, if he can maintain a media blackout for a little bit, do you think the demand would still be high?
Yeah, I think you're right, Rick. He needs to take a little time off. You know, he's kind of going through the same thing that a very well-respected guy is going through, the actor James Franco, after a horrible hosting assignment at the Academy Awards. Suddenly people say, you know what, maybe we've seen too much of James Franco. Maybe we need a little time away. And I just, you know, James Franco's a class act, and we can't compare James to Charlie Sheen, except in just this kind of oversaturation of appearances.
Yeah, I mean, Norman Schwarzkopf during the Gulf War wasn't on as many outlets and consecutive appearances as this guy. It really is. There's not much of a precedent, I don't think, for the way he's been making the rounds of as many different places. Simon, again, in terms of staying power, because it's gonna be a little bit of a lag time before this next thing, whatever it is, gets out there. I mean, you know, even if we're talking late spring, that's probably about the best you could look for in terms of that. If he withdraws for a little bit, and it would take more discipline than it looks like he's got right now, do you think he could maintain the appetite for this thing, or are we about to hit a turning point as far as people saying, same crazy stuff he did last week?
I think we're hitting the turning point right now, and it would be great if he could just get out of the scene for like 3 to 6 months. If he wants to do something with Cuban, people will do something. And I would not rule out a scripted show, a scripted drama, a scripted comedy, sitcom, sketch comedy, whatever. Don't forget that with Warner Brothers out of the way, he can now do that kind of show. As I mentioned before, it's not for an HDNet. They did do a sitcom, Svetlana, last spring, and certainly Cuban can raise the millions to put an ambitious scripted show together, so I would certainly not rule that out.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Also, people should not be really quick to dismiss that as a possibility. In terms of what may lie ahead for him also, Lloyd, you know, the way that everything has been unfolding right now, and this is an almost unprecedented, it pretty much is unprecedented, this whole trajectory, a fall from grace in terms of being publicly fired, and yet, in this day and age, because of social media and everything like that, this technological revolution of the last 15 to 20 years, he still holds an awful lot of power in his hands. He reached a million followers on Twitter in record time, 25 hours, 17 minutes. I ain't going to lie. I was one of them. We all want to see the train wreck. He made it to 2 million. I think that was also in record time, although I'm not going to quote myself on that. I think it was record time. But anyways, there's talk now about him getting into the same business as Kim Kardashian and some of these other celebs with these tweets that are they'll get paid for. He'll get paid for pimping stuff here. He's been fairly open about that, about seeing it as a gold mine. What do you think the commercial possibilities are, given that this guy is wearing the outlaw status kind of on his sleeves here? You know, are the Haineses of the world and the folks that have been with him before going to want to continue to be associated?
Well, you're 100% right, Rick. Celebrity is a major currency in this country. And just one thing about Mark Cuban that I think Simon can back me up on. Mark Cuban's had some trouble getting big league distribution of HDNet. Time Warner dropped it. I believe Cablevision dropped it. He needs Charlie Sheen to kind of put pressure on these cable providers to basically put his network back on television.
That could make sense. It would be a good lever, you know, for however long that is. Let me ask you this, though, Simon, particularly with your opinion that the shelf life on this thing is ebbing, what kind of leverage does Charlie Sheen give good old Cuban for getting this thing in more homes?
Well, the best thing he could do with Cuban is whatever project he does, to have it be the comeback story and be the comeback kid. What we've seen time and time again, to use a sports metaphor, is that America loves comeback stories, personal resurrection. The person down their luck, the person who's had the unfortunate lot in life and comes back stronger, braver, better than ever. A personal transformation. And if Charlie can have that act together, and as I said, he's a marvelous actor, we know he's talented, and he can get the right, you know, property after 3 to 6 months away from the spectrum and make it work, America will embrace him again. No question.
Well, and let me ask you a similar thing to what I asked Lloyd a second ago here about leveraging social media as others have done, Kim Kardashian and some of these other ones out there, and it's truly remarkable to me that anybody is going to follow her lead on what she endorses, and yet it's proven to be the case. Again, never underestimate the stupidity of the American people. But be that as it may, given where Charlie Sheen is going here, I got to think mainstream products like Haines that's been with him before, I got to think that's out of there. Are we looking at something where if he's going to be pushing stuff on Twitter, we're going to be having to look at the porn emporiums of the world and folks like that? Who's going to want to touch him in terms of mainstream commercial entities these days? Or am I wrong about that?
Well, I can only hope that the porn comes back myself.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Simon, what do you think? Is there anybody mainstream that would want to get behind him with his Twitter endorsements?
Don't think so. Even probably 5 hour energy, I don't think would want to touch him at this point. What the best thing that Sheen could do is be cold turkey about this. Get off Twitter, get off Facebook, get off the public eye, get your act back together, get your kids back if you can, provide a decent, you know, great environment for them to live and grow up, and then come back stronger.
5 hour energy, yeah. Well, I think it would be kind of disingenuous if he tried to sell anybody on liking that better than Blow right about now, but that's just my that's my jaded personal opinion on this. Let's get some overall predictions here, and I think that this may not be the last time we talk to you guys about this, depending on the shelf life. You guys are, of course, you know, quasi-regulars with us, and we're glad to have you as such, so I can't predict what we're going to talk about with you next time. Wouldn't surprise me if this was the case, if the shelf life endures. I'll start with you, Lloyd.
Yep.
How long do you think this thing stays hot? How long do you think the fascination stays up here? Of course, a lot of that is going to be how savvy he is in starting to monitor this, pull back if he needs to, et cetera. There's a lot of people out there, including one of our friends in the 21st Century Media Alliance, our good friend Scott Pullins, who says, crazy like a fox, crazy like a fox. I guess we'll find out if he's got the wisdom to pull back on this thing and allow the chance to monetize from the next media project. But Lloyd, what do you think in terms of how long this thing's got last, got left to last as a front burner story of fascination?
I think, again, as a front burner, I think another week or two. Look, we're still, just like, hey, remember all the hype about, will the NFL go on strike, the lockout, blah, blah, blah. Now suddenly things are nice and quiet. We'll pick the hype up again on Friday night. But I get the feeling that it's going to go on the back burner for a while. Another week or two, I think Simon's point is right. I think Charlie's going to take a little sabbatical and, work from there.
By the way, let me just highlight what you just said. Pending NFL lockout, budget negotiations in Washington that may lead to a federal government shutdown. Several states, Wisconsin, Ohio, et cetera, were major precepts of how states and state employees deal with one another in terms of collective bargaining or no collective bargaining are handled. Major upheavals in the Middle East that may lead to $150 a barrel oil once again. All of these things going on, I'm probably missing two or three things in my very tired mind right now. Oh, by the way, March Madness starts next week. All these things, Lloyd, and Charlie Sheen is on the tip of everybody's tongue. How incredible is that? It's not like there's nothing going on in the world.
You've just named all these serious problems. Charlie Sheen's a distraction. It's a water cooler topic, so we don't want to deal with those horrible things that you're talking about.
Yeah, but Lloyd, look, Michael Jackson, when he passed away, dog days of summer. There was nothing going on. It got 2 weeks. I'm not going to say by default because it was a major story,
sure,
but there was nothing for it to crowd out, if memory serves. This is not that. This is crowding out an awful lot of stuff. I'm fascinated by that. Lloyd, I can't help it.
No, I agree with your premise. I mean, all those stories you just mentioned are far more serious to our, maybe not so much the NFL, but certainly what's going on with $150 barrel oil. That is very serious to everyone. And but Charlie Sheen, look, you go back to the Depression, there was Shirley Temple, movies was an escape. Charlie Sheen's become our national escape. We talk about him to forget our real serious problems.
Well, Simon, let me throw it to you. I mean, you know, how Charlie Sheen is monopolizing this type of attention for the better part of a month, crowding out so many things off of the front page here. Again, I will probably marvel at this for years to come.
He's not going to monopolize for long. I agree with Lloyd. Another week, maybe two at the latest, and then it's sabbatical time. And speaking of the National Football League, to divert the subject, there are a few people in D.C., I think, who are watching very carefully what happens with these negotiations and the mediation activity, because if the lockout happens, if the NFL seasons go, NBC, all bets are off as to what kind of season they have. Sunday Night Football right now is the one show that has NBC not being on life support right now.
Yeah.
And they've got Robert Greenblatt, the new head of NBC programming, came in with the Comcast virtue player Showtime. He's got a huge tall order, and what he does not need is to have no Sunday Night Football.
Yeah. Well, I think that'll be a prime topic the next time we have you on, Simon. And I guess my closing note on that would be, hey, Comcast, welcome to the big time of network TV. Enjoy having NBC without Sunday Night Football this year. That's really something.
Absolutely. And two more things before we go. One, this is going to be a very special March Madness, first time broadcasting a cable share it on the way to ultimately the Turner Network doing the Final Four. It'll be very interesting to see what kind of audience TNT, TBS, and True TV get. And secondly, I mentioned Eddie Einhorn at the top. Someone else who was very instrumental in the way we watch sports passed away over the weekend. I'm referring to Frank Cicchinian, the producer director for many years of CBS Sports Golf Coverage. What Einhorn did for college basketball, True TV did for golf, he created so many innovations, we don't have the time to say everything he did that transformed the face of how we watch golf. He passed away, and thank God the World Golf Hall of Fame, before he did from lung cancer, decided to give him a special honor, which he videotaped a acceptance nominations for, which we'll see in May. A great thing for the World Cup Hall of Fame to do. And Frank was one of the best people ever in the history of sports television.
Well, that's awesome for you to mention, Simon. Yeah, that needs to be out there for people to reflect on those contributions. All I can say, guys, is I knew it was going to be a lot of fun. I knew we were going to cover a lot of stuff. It really, really lived up to it. Love talking to you guys individually and together. We'll definitely reprise again with you in some form or fashion soon. Great to have you guys both as FDH Lounge dignitaries.
Great to be here again, Rick. And by the way, Simon, congratulations on becoming a dignitary. That's the better than being knighted.
Thank you. Appreciate it. By the way, it's Marvel Televised, Monday, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific on blogtalkradio.com. Catch it. We got good stuff coming up.
Yep. We always love to promote that, Simon. We link to it, and we talk about it all the time. It's great stuff. Thank you very much, fellas. We'll do it again soon.
Very much.
All right,
hey. Bye-bye.
Love both of you guys. Thanks very much. Lloyd Carroll and Simon Applebaum, two of our New York media area insiders. Lloyd from Good Times Magazine, Queens Chronicle, and many other fine outlets. Simon from Tomorrow Will Be Televised, the excellent blog and webcast.